Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear the very moving and impassioned speech by architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, given on November 19th, 2012, at the conference 9/11 Revisited, Seeking the Truth in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It will take close to 30 minutes, so let's get started. Here's the amazing Richard Gage.
Good evening, everybody. I'm deeply honored to speak here today in Kuala Lumpur at this international conference on 9/11 in front of our most distinguished hosts, speakers, and guests, where I understand that at least 30 representatives of embassies from around the world are present. The 1,700 architects and engineers that I have the honor to represent are technical and building professionals who have put their reputations on the line and have nothing to gain in order to bring this evidence to the eyes of the world. In this brief address, I'll only be able to give you a few of the highlights of the overwhelming volume of clear forensic evidence, video, and eyewitness testimony that concerns them so very much, and that is available on our websites, ae911truth.org, 911expertsspeakout.org, and 911explosiveevidence.org. These experts rely on the scientific method. We've had it for about 100 years in the West. We formulate a question: how did the towers come down? We do some background research, make some observations, and come up with our best guess. We construct a hypothesis, make predictions from that hypothesis. I think it came down by fires. No, I think maybe it came down by controlled demolition. No hypothesis is left untouched. We test these hypotheses with experiments, analyze the results, and draw conclusions. If the hypothesis is corroborated, we report the results in an open, transparent manner for all to see and for bodies of scientists to build on the work of others. If the hypothesis is not corroborated, we go back and come up with a hypothesis that stands a better chance against the evidence. So let's apply the scientific method today. What are the forces that destroy buildings? There are many, of course. Fire is certainly one of them. Fire moves through an office building every 20 minutes or so in a given area, burning up the fuel that's available, looking for fresh new fuel sources. So it's an asymmetrical collapse when buildings come down due to fires. The building would fall over, not straight down through the path of greatest resistance. So you'll note that no high-rise has ever come down due to fire in the history of high-rises. And there's been dozens and dozens of very hot, large, and long-lasting fires in these buildings. Buildings also are blown up sometimes. These buildings exploded. There's thick volumes of pyroclastic-like smoke with entrained pulverized building materials. There's witnesses that hear sounds of explosions. They see flashes of light. When we have these characteristics, we know that a building has been blown up with explosives. It's very different from fires. Now, some buildings can be blown up with a series of highly engineered explosives, such as these. They're called controlled demolitions. We have hundreds of examples from all across the world to draw upon. And the way this is done is they put thousands of explosives in the building and then synchronistically, floor by floor, detonate them, which allows the building to come down symmetrically, smoothly, at free fall acceleration nearly. So there are a series of features associated with these controlled demolitions. We have a sudden onset, usually at the base of the structure, the onset of destruction. We have a straight down symmetrical collapse into the building's footprint because demolition waves remove the column supports. This results in a free fall acceleration, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of the building, and resulting in the total dismemberment of the steel structure, ready for loading and shipment. There's minimal damage, of course, to adjacent structures. And there's sounds and flashes of explosions heard and seen by witnesses. There's enormous clouds of pyroclastic like smoke with entrained building solids. There's explosive charges that go off at different areas, wrong timing perhaps. These are called squibs or isolated explosive ejections. And of course, chemical evidence, debris left in the pile afterwards of explosives. This is all direct evidence of explosives. And guess what? Fire can't be responsible for any one of these, let alone all of them. And if we have additional supporting governmental documentation, experts agree, yeah, that's a controlled demolition. Foreknowledge, these are planned months in advance. This is all proof of controlled demolition. Well, with that in mind, why don't we take a look at the third skyscraper to be destroyed on 9/11? How many of you knew that two planes brought down three skyscrapers on 9/11? Most architects and engineers know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history, 47-story World Trade Center 7, the tallest building in most of the states in the U.S. It wasn't hit by an airplane, and yet at about 5:20 in the afternoon, this building suffers the collapse that we'll take a look at. And then we'll compare the features of this building's destruction to those of a controlled demolition, starting with, is there a sudden onset of destruction at the base of the building? Let's listen to newscaster Dan Rather.
What you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
Well, that's an interesting commentary. Let's take a closer look. Is there a straight down, symmetrical collapse into this building's footprint? Let's look from West Street. Pretty straight down, pretty symmetrical. Watch the penthouse drop a second before the overall building comes down, indicating core column damage, massive simultaneous core column damage. Well, I'm not convinced yet. Let's compare World Trade Center 7 next to an explosive controlled demolition on the right. Is there any similarity? Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives? And yet NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress with explaining this collapse to us, never even looked at this possibility, even though every high-rise that has been brought down with this technology. And no high-rise has been brought down by fire. The chief culprit, according to NIST, and these are the worst fires that we have photographic or video evidence of in these buildings, and they were out an hour prior to the building's collapse on the floors where we were told the initiation of collapse occurred. And, of course, it drops straight down neatly, almost into its own footprint. How does that happen? How do we bring a building straight down? We have to take out all 80 columns in the building virtually simultaneously. Does fire have that level of precision? And how fast does this building come down? You can see the building gaining additional speed, additional distance with every second, indicating free fall. What is free fall? I'm going to drop this bottle. It's going to fall. 3, 2, 1. That's how fast this building dropped in just 6.5 seconds. How does that happen? All of the resistance has to be removed. That's why it's called free fall. How does that happen? Well, whatever made that happen, it's responsible also for the total dismemberment of the steel structure, such that a 47-story skyscraper falls like a house of cards to a pile just 3 or 4 or 5 stories tall. And of course, there are at least half a dozen witnesses that hear explosions, like Kevin McPadden, first responder.
And then it was like another 2-3 seconds, you heard explosions, like ba-boom. It's like a distinct sound. It's not like when in compression, like boom, 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 like floors that were dropping and collapsing. This was ba-boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something. That, to me, I knew that was an explosion. There was no doubt in my mind.
Explosions like this, perhaps.
Yeah, here's one of the guys. He can tell you I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
None of these explosions are a part of the official story. Why not? Is there chemical evidence left behind in the residue? We'll come back to this in a moment. But these first eight characteristics, of course, are direct evidence of explosive destruction. Fire can't account for any one of them, let alone all eight of them. If fire was to bring any building down, surely it would have been World Trade Center 5, fully engulfed. Did it come down? No. Steel frame, high-rise, mid-rise office buildings do not come down as a result of fire. Yet these fires brought this building down in 6.5 seconds, completely destroyed. Does it make sense? Not according to the 27-year controlled demolition expert Danny Jawenko, the top European controlled demolition company. It starts from below. They've simply blown away the columns. This is controlled demolition. Team of experts did this. It's professional work, without a doubt. He made this statement not having been aware of what happened, that this building had come down on 9/11. Was there any foreknowledge of this building's destruction? Let's listen to these mysterious construction workers walking away from Building 7, looking back after hearing an explosion and saying this. How do they know that the building is about to blow up? Interestingly enough, Kevin McPadden, who's listening to a radio held in the hands of a Red Cross worker, hears this.
At the last few seconds, he took his hand off and you heard 3, 2, 1.
Do fires bring buildings down to countdowns? Jane Stanley of the BBC is on the job. She reports the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it happened. They apologize for this confusing error, citing the very confusing events of the day. Does this make them psychic? Well, the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition appears to be corroborated. In fact, all eight of the controlled demolition features are provided here, indicating direct evidence of explosive demolition, fire not being able to account for any one of these. With additional corroborating circumstantial evidence, we believe this is proof of controlled demolition. And it's a huge problem for the official story, because we're told fire brought these buildings down. If we were lied to about World Trade Center 7, what else were we lied to about? Let's take a look. In the Twin Towers, we have features of controlled demolition, too. Let's take a look. Sudden onset of destruction, not at the base of the towers, but at the location of jet plane impacts, interestingly enough, because these are deceptive controlled demolitions blamed on the jet plane impacts and fires. Where we hear sounds of explosions heard by first responders, flashes of light seen by them in the oral histories, which were recorded the month after 9/11, and which were hidden from public view until the court forced the release of this. Why? Is it because 118 and more of them are talking about what they heard in terms of explosions, what they experienced in the building, and what they saw? Let's see. Somewhere around the middle of the World Trade Center, there was this orange and red flash coming out. Initially, just one flash. Then it kept popping all the way around the building, and the building had started to explode. One floor under another. I figured it was a bomb because it looked like a synchronized, deliberate kind of thing. It seemed like on television when they blow up these buildings. It seemed like it was going all the way around like a belt. All these explosions. Let's see what they might be referring to. World Trade Center 1 on the right, a known controlled demolition on the left. Belts of explosions starting at the midpoint, not necessarily at the bottom. Is there any similarity? Sudden, continuous drop. Is there enough similarity to warrant an investigation into the possible use of explosives? Saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. I saw low-level flashes. We actually heard the pops. You know, you heard the pops of the building. With each popping sound, initially an orange and then a red flash came out of the building. Let's see what the South Tower looks like. Is there any similarity to it on the right side and a known controlled demolition on the left? We think so. I saw a flash, flash, flash. Then it looked like the building came down. I thought the terrorists planted explosives somewhere in the building. That's how loud it was, a crackling explosive. What did these first responders experience?
We started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, it was if they had detonated.
Yeah,
they were planning to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down.
Are they credible witnesses? Well, let's take a look at a little simple physics lesson. What happens when a large truck runs into a small car? Which one wins? Okay, the stronger structure. Does it matter if we drop the light car onto the heavier truck? No. Obviously, an analogy. The lighter part of a structure cannot destroy the heavier part below. They are crushed in an equal and opposite destructive force. Watch, in fact, what happens. The upper structure is destroyed after you see, like the first responders said, belts of explosions. And this upper part is, in fact, being destroyed itself in what appears to be a miniature controlled demolition, not unlike World Trade Center 7. Now, what's happening after that? A large explosion, laterally distributed pulverized building materials trailed by pyroclastic-like smoke clouds, landing 600 feet away. World Trade Center 7, World Trade Center 1 on the left, a known volcanic eruption on the right. Is there any similarity to what we might expect a gravitational collapse to behave like? No. We're looking at very explosive event. Look below. These laterally distributed pulverized building materials land 1,200 feet in every direction, well outside the boundaries of ground zero. Are there explosive charges going off 20, 40, even 60 stories down? Indeed, as documented here in this video. We're told that these are puffs of air being produced by that giant piston, the upper 12 stories in the case of World Trade Center 1, pushing air down the elevator shafts, and it's got to come out somewhere, right? Well, these are not puffs of air. They're clearly pulverized building materials. They're being ejected at 160 to 200 feet per second and 20 to 60 stories down in obviously an engineered pattern, often at the midpoint between the corners of the building. Do we have a near free fall pace through the path of greatest resistance? Well, this building comes down in somewhere between 9 and 12 seconds. That is merely free fall acceleration. And it is accelerating straight down through 80,000 tons of structural steel framework that must have been removed before this building's descent or during it in a very precisely timed manner, because we also have the total dismemberment of this structure during the event, where the steel skeleton is completely broken up and distributed outside the perimeter of these buildings. Watch the South Tower. In terms of dismemberment, it begins to tip over, and yet, even after 22 degrees off center, we still have a symmetrical collapse down below. So we have asymmetrical loading off this block that's falling, continuing theoretically its angular momentum. We'd expect it to fall in one massive heap down there, right? We have asymmetrical damage from the fires, and we have asymmetrical damage from the airplanes. And yet, watch from below, complete symmetrical destruction all the way down, like the fireman described, belts of explosions all the way down to the ground. Watch down below. What are we looking at? Are we looking at a pancaking collapse, or are we looking at a series of explosions and complete destruction all the way down to the ground? Ejecting laterally, as you can see, freely flying objects, structural steel sections, landing 300 to 600 feet in every direction. It's not a banana peeling, it's free-flying objects. And these take an extraordinary amount of energy, enough energy to eject a cannonball, 200-pound cannonball, 3 miles. And so where are the floors if everything's being ejected laterally? We would expect to find 110 floors stacked up at the base of each of these towers. What do we see? Only a two-story pile on the left, of core columns, perimeter columns, and so forth. On the right, we have a pancaking collapse. We might expect to see something a lot more like that. But we don't. We have the complete destruction of the steel structure and the complete pulverization of 90,000 tons of concrete, which we would expect in floors stacked up, but which is pulverized, as you can see here, in midair, landing in a 3-square-mile area completely across lower Manhattan in a blanket 12 to 15 centimeters thick. In that dust, the World Trade Center dust, we find all kinds of interesting evidence. In fact, evidence of extreme high temperature in the piles themselves, 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Pouring out of the South Tower, we have liquid molten iron or steel. We can tell by the temperature, by the color, that its temperatures exceed the melting point of iron, as a matter of fact. We're told that this is melted airplane aluminum, right? But it can't be, because melted aluminum is silvery. It doesn't glow bright orange, yellow in sunlight. The World Trade Center structural engineer himself, Leslie Robertson, describes a river of steel. These are extremely hot temperatures, of course, that office fires and jet fuel can't even approach. Red-hot steel being pulled from deep within the pile. What does this mean? Literally, molten steel, says the president of the cleanup company. Steel members in the debris that appear to have been partially evaporated, which takes 3 to 4 times the temperatures associated with jet fuel or office fires. FEMA documents this in Appendix C of their report. Melting of steel capable of turning solid steel girder into Swiss cheese, which fire protection engineers, first responders have never seen the likes of these temperatures. Liquid iron is documented. Where does the liquid iron come from? Iron is not used in steel structures. This is not steel. How is concrete melted 3,200 degrees Fahrenheit temperatures? And yet this is the official response from the lead structural engineer of NIST about these high temperature phenomena.
First of all, let's go back to your basic premise that there was a pool of molten steel. I know of absolutely nobody, and no eyewitness who said so, nobody who's produced it.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Yeah, like lava.
Like lava.
From a volcano.
There actually melted beams where it was molten steel that was being dug out.
Underground, it was still so hot that molten metal dripped down the sides of a wall.
And the cleanup was very difficult in the beginning. Steel was coming out red in certain areas from the first couple of weeks.
This fused element of steel, molten steel.
And they pulled off a big block of concrete, and there was a little river of steel flowing.
Pretty interesting, because his fingerprint is all over the evaporated ends of these columns, and later he denies it. This is the piece that was saved for Appendix C, FEMA report. Well, again, World Trade Center fires maybe got 600 to 800 degrees centigrade, but structural steel doesn't melt until up to 1,500 degrees centigrade. What can create those temperatures? Let's look at one possible material, chemical reaction, thermite, an incendiary that releases 2,500 degree centigrade temperatures and can be responsible for the molten material dripping out of the debris in this tractor. Could thermite have produced all this? And what is thermite anyway?
An incendiary used by the military, thermite is a compound of iron oxide and aluminum, which when ignited sustains an extreme heat reaction, creating molten iron. In just 2 seconds, thermite can reach temperatures over 4,500 degrees Fahrenheit, quite enough to liquefy steel. We know that open air fires cannot burn hot enough to melt steel, but metal had melted at the base of the towers. Appendix C of the FEMA report describes sulfur residues on the World Trade Center steel. The New York Times called this the deepest mystery of all. Sulfur slightly lowers the melting point of iron, and iron oxide and iron sulfide had formed on the surface of the structural steel. Sulfur used with thermite is called thermate, producing even faster results.
So all of the evidence must be looked at, not just that which supports our particular theory. In the case of NIST, this is completely overlooked. Thermite, of course, can be used in patented devices to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter, and is fully capable of destroying steel structure. Is there any evidence, though, of thermite in the World Trade Center dust? Well, there's enough dust to analyze, and the USGS does just that, along with the R.J. Lee Group, and finds abundant iron microspheres, tiny iron microspheres the diameter of a human hair. They find in up to 6% of these dust samples is composed of these ubiquitous, previously molten iron microspheres, indicating tremendously hot temperatures that fire and jet fuel are not capable of, and indicating by their roundness that they were formed in the air, in midair, during the event, as USGS and R.J. Lee document. So these spheres are produced as a result of a thermite reaction. Tens of thousands of them, as you see in this simple little experiment here. The iron spheres are analyzed, and they have the signature of thermite in them. Sulfur, aluminum, iron, silica, oxygen. But what else was found in all this World Trade Center dust? Any unignited thermite, perhaps? In these samples, independently collected by this international team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, they find in each of their samples hundreds of these small red-gray chips. The red side is composed of what? The exact ingredients of thermite. This should not be found in the World Trade Center dust at all. Iron, oxygen, silica, carbon. Let's zoom into the red layer 50,000 times. What do we see? Small, very small particles of iron oxide and aluminum powders that are 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. These are nanoscaled particles built from the atomic scale up. So they take these red chips, they put them in a heater. When they get up to 422 degrees centigrade, they ignite. What happens when these chips ignite in this heater, in this experiment? They produce iron spheres, the same iron spheres that are found in the World Trade Center dust by officials from the USGS that have no explanation. Well, here is the explanation. It's as clear as day. You see, it's an internally self-consistent set of evidence that can put a whole lot of people away for treason for a very long time if we can find the culprits of this material. Actually, it's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. It's a very sophisticated process made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories in the U.S. Now, this work is documented in a 25-page peer-reviewed paper by the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. It stands uncontested. The way to contest somebody's conspiracy theory is to put forth your own peer-reviewed paper. This has not been done. So you see, all of these features are direct evidence, not of fire, but of explosive destruction. Fire can't account for any one of them, let alone all 10 of them. So is our hypothesis corroborated? We believe so. In fact, as you can see, this evidence is clear and convincing and quite damning to the official story and of the events of 9/11. It's critical that everyone hearing this testimony take appropriate and timely action and not simply rely upon others to do what is necessary. There are many actions you can take as well, such as supporting these proceedings. I also refer you to our excellent series of DVDs, which are available outside in the back after the session, and to the special screening of our new movie at lunchtime right here in this room, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, which includes the testimony of 43 of our petition signers, high-rise architects, structural engineers, scientists, controlled demolition experts, 9/11 family members, and many others, which we'll be submitting into the official record of these proceedings. We also ask you to support our historic effort at AE 9/11 Truth to speak directly to every Muslim country in the world As you can imagine, we've not succeeded in the United States to bring this information, the story of the century, out in the mainstream media. This underscores the tremendous significance of these proceedings of the Perdana Global Peace Foundation. Please do whatever you can to carry this vital work forward. Thank you so very much.
And again, that was architect Richard Gage. If you're new to 9/11 Truth, please go to the Architects and Engineers website, ae911truth.org. You owe it to yourself and your country to educate yourself about the science of 9/11 and the lies we've been told. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.